College with Chris Graham.
Let's talk some UVA football. Chris Graham here on the podcast, and the Hoos coming off a bye week and now heading towards Miami as the 4-1 Virginia team will face a 2-3 Miami team that is wounded, to say the least. 42-35 loss to Virginia Tech, down 28-0 in the second quarter, made it a game, actually had a chance to take the lead in the fourth quarter. After going for two on a touchdown and converting, making it 35-29, scored a touchdown on their next series, missed the extra point in a rainstorm, and then Virginia Tech scored in the last couple minutes to claim the win. Five turnovers for that Miami team in that loss, 550-plus yards of offense against the Hokies' defense, and a big game for Kosi Perry as he threw for over 400 yards in relief. So some turmoil there with a changing quarterback situation, the loss, 0-2 in the ACC. I mean, you know, they're wounded. And a wounded team can scare you, you know, just from a fan perspective. You know, we're not talking about the X's and O's here. We're just talking about the sort of game theory kind of thing. But another Miami loss, they're 2-4 overall. They'd be 0-3 in the ACC. They'd be out of the race. They were projected at the ACC kickoff back in July to be a close second in the ACC Coastal. So this was looked at the time as sort of the game of the year in the Coastal. And now, if you're Miami and you lose this game, you're way out of it. You might not even make a bowl. You might not be a 500 team this year if you lose this game. First year new coach, Manny Diaz. And so, I don't know. You know, the animal that's backed into a corner, you get scared of. And this is a very talented Miami team. We'll talk a little bit more about the talent and the speed and everything else on offense, particularly later in the podcast. But I wanted to start talking about Virginia's issues. We're coming off a bye week, so, you know, nothing new. But the makeshift offensive line, I think, is something that is, if you want to talk about a limitation, this is a Virginia team that's 4-1, has ACC wins over Pitt and Florida State. Your one loss was a game that you played a team that played in the playoff last year on their field. And, you know, if you don't turn it over five times, you beat them. I'm just going to say it like that. It's the truth. You don't turn it over five times, you beat them. And you almost did with five turnovers. You know, two of them were strip sacks that led directly to points. So, but that said, the reason you had the five turnovers was because of the weak point of this team is the offensive line. And unfortunately for a football team, that's one area you don't want to have a weak link. I mean, you know, everybody's got something. Even Alabama, the New England Patriots have something that's amiss with their team. Nobody's perfect. But it all starts with your line, your offensive line, defensive line. You have to put pressure on the quarterback. You got to keep the other team from getting pressure on your quarterback, right? Got to stop the running game of the other side. You got to be able to run. And if your offensive line is a weak point of your team, boy, that makes it tough. And you can look at the numbers. These numbers are pretty stark, actually. You know, last year the group it was interesting. You know, last year the year three of the Bronco era, the offensive line without really any new people coming in just got better, got stronger, got better, and you know, ran for 173 yards a game, 174 yards a game. You know, you had a 1,000-yard tailback in Jordan Ellis. Your quarterback, Bryce Perkins, ran for 923. And, you know, you had to think, wow, that's a strength. But then in the offseason, it was kind of weird. R.J. Proctor, who graded out as your best offensive lineman last year, decides to grad transfer to Oklahoma. I can see it. If you think you're a pro prospect, you know, go to Oklahoma and, you know, you can really show you're a pro prospect. Unfortunately for Proctor, unfortunately for us, we lost a guy to Oklahoma who's just backing up at Oklahoma. Our best guy is the backup there. Our best guy from last year anyway is a backup there. We'd love to have R.J. Proctor right now. We're a bit thin. And this is one I am not one. I wrote a column on this today. I didn't write this in the column, but I did write about this, what I'm about to say. But before I do that, I want to preface. I am not one to blame the previous coach in any way, shape, or form, especially we're year four into the Bronco Mendenhall era. You know, there are folks at Virginia Tech who are trying to blame Frank Beamer for Justin Fuente's troubles right now. I don't like to do that, but in this case, just from a roster construction standpoint, this is one area, offensive line and the thinness therein, is one area that you can still attribute to the failures at the end of the Mike London era. You know, your best offensive line players are going to be, I mean, we're 4 years into Bronco, so that means, you know, he had one recruiting class that came in. His first one would have been holdovers from the London era. And so he's really had just his three of his own. You know, the last London class or even two, you'd have some redshirts. Your best linemen are guys who are physically older. They're physically bigger. They've had 3 or 4 years to lift weights, eat better, get stronger, etc. And you know, largely, especially at programs like Virginia, your best linemen, best offensive linemen are going to be your redshirt juniors and your seniors and redshirt seniors. You know, the 4 and 5 year guys. We don't have a lot of those guys. I looked at the two deep for this week on the offensive line. There's actually 9 guys because Dylan Rinkensmeyer is actually listed twice. He's listed as the left tackle one, right tackle one and center two. Listed as a backup center this week because Tyler Fannin's out for the season. But of the 9 guys listed on the two deep for offensive line, you don't have any seniors. You don't even have any redshirt juniors on that group. You've got 1 true freshman, 2 redshirt freshmen, 4 sophomores, 2 juniors. These are all Mendenhall recruits, which, you know, what it suggests is that it's a work in progress. You know, three guys in their first year of playing time, you know, 4 sophomores, there's the 7 of the 9 are guys who've been on grounds for less than 2 years, for a year and a half. That means they've been on the way in the way program for between a few months and a year and a half, the training and everything else. So, I mean, they'll get better. Clearly, all the playing time they're getting, all the development they're getting next year, following year, gosh, you know, you're going to have, a junior, 2 years from now, you're going to have a junior, 2 redshirt juniors, and 4 seniors. That'll be a pretty good offensive line. But right now, they're young guys, and they're physically smaller. They're not as strong. They're not as adept. The offensive line is a very technique, skill area that you as a fan don't watch that much. You just assume that they're going to block the guys. They're going to either pass block or run block and do what they're supposed to. You just assume that because you're watching the ball. You're watching a quarterback. You're watching a running back. You're watching the receivers. Those guys can't do their jobs, though, if the guys up front don't give them time to do their jobs, give them holes to be able to run through, etc. And it's hard with all these young guys. Bronco addressed that in his presser this week. He was asked about it. He said, I would say in general, rather than just this week, is a continuation of work that's happened since the minute he arrived, back in December of 2015. They've needed grad transfers. They're developing players. You know, they have enough scholarship players now. Think back a couple years ago. I think I have this right. They went into the bowl game against Navy with 5 healthy scholarship linemen. You know, that's not an excuse for why they lost 49-7, but you know, you go into a bowl game ostensibly against a quality opponent, and of course Navy was a quality opponent in that game 2 years ago. You got 5 healthy scholarship linemen? What the hell? You're not going to win that game. That doesn't, again, excuse losing 49-7, but you know, you've got to have 10. You've got to have 10 healthy guys, 10 healthy guys to choose from. At the college level, you've got to play those guys. You know, it's not like in the NFL where, you know, those guys are physically mature enough. You know, you have a couple of subs on the offensive line, and largely you play your 5 starters, if not the whole game, 95% of the snaps, barring injury. At the college level, you need 8 or 9 healthy guys. We got enough guys now to play. It's just that they still have to develop. And of course, as time goes on, the recruiting is getting better. There are a couple of guys who are still not in this mix yet that are being looked at, you know, true freshmen who are being looked four-star guys that as they develop, they'll continue to, you know, they'll get better, and they already have a lot to work with. But right now, young, you got 9 guys who are, 3 years less than the program. 7 of those 9 are less than 2 years in the program. And so why are we struggling right now? Well, that's why. Bryce Perkins last year, I talked about how he had 923 yards on the ground. That's 71.0 per game. This year, averaging 32.8 per game. He's the same guy. He's not hurt. He's the same. He's the same Bryce Perkins. The same dynamic Bryce Perkins. You're just, you know, he's running for his life now instead of running. The run game itself overall, 107.6 yards per game, down over 65 yards per game from last year. So, you know, this is a team that's 4-1. I mentioned the wins over Pitt and Florida State. You know, impressive wins, I thought. The loss to Notre Dame wasn't You know, it was a turnover game, and the turnovers were your quarterback got sacked 8 times, 6 times in the third quarter, the quarter where that game turned around for Notre Dame and against Virginia. You know, you're 4-1. You know, you're a half away from being 5-0 with a win over a playoff team from last year. But it feels like something's left out there, and that something left out there, unfortunately for UVA fans, is offensive line. And the bad thing is, you just don't get better. You don't go to the waiver wire. There's not a trade deadline. You just got to make do with what you got. And that's where UVA football is right now. So you look at, you know, this. Now I want to look at the other side. The Virginia defense, of course, has had a solid year. You look at one matchup, and I saw this on Twitter, and you know, this is what made me decide to write this story. I saw a quick tweet from a UVA football observer, close to UVA. I wish I could attribute in my mind. I can't remember who it was. I saw this from, but it made me start thinking in this direction. It was about how Miami is 120, and they didn't put this number, but I looked it up. Miami's 128th in terms of sacks allowed by their offensive line. 128th out of 130 teams in the country. They allow 4.5 sacks per game. Virginia happens to be fifth in the country in sacks defensively. So you got the immovable object and the very movable force, or what would that be? The immovable force and the very movable object. Let's put it that way, because if you're defensive line, you're crashing into that very movable object. That was the Miami offensive line. So you know, and Miami is not running the ball well. They are 86th in the country in rushing offense per game, 143 yards per game. Virginia's defensive front is top 20, actually 21st in the country in rushing defense. So in Miami last week had the aforementioned 553 yards total offense, but that was mostly through the air. The backup quarterback Perry threw for 442. Starter Williams threw for 47 before he got taken out for the three picks. So, you know, even with that great offensive performance overall in terms of productivity, just total yards-wise, not a lot of running there. So you have a team that can't protect its quarterback very well in Miami in terms of its offensive line, playing against a team that is very good at stopping a team and in fact, putting pressure on opposing team's quarterback. And that could play into Virginia's hands. The only thing that would worry you, I think, about that side of the matchup, the Virginia defense against the Miami offense, would be that Miami still, you know, this is the thing that vexes me about Miami and has forever. Since they came to the ACC, I believe it was 2004, you know, they've played once in the ACC championship game. We've not played at all, UVA, but, you know, Miami is Miami and Virginia is Virginia from a football standpoint. They were brought into this conference to And they were put on the other side of the division structure from Florida State. The thought was, well, every year we'll have Miami, Florida State. We've not had that once. Florida State had a run for a few years. That's been a couple of years ago now. But the Miami, Florida State, the reapproximation of the UNC Duke, I guess you'd say, from the basketball perspective, has never materialized. And it's because Miami's failed. The weird thing is, except for the Randy Shannon era, since the Randy Shannon era, the Al Golden era, the Mark Richt era, they've recruited like Miami should recruit. I mean, you're talking about top 5, top 10, top 15 classes at the worst on a consistent basis. They just haven't translated on the field. And this group here, very talented, especially offensively. They got playmakers. They just can't. I don't know what it is. And they don't know what it is either, because they're still trying to figure it out. But they do have guys who can, you know, who can certainly, if you don't get to the quarterback, they can burn you. Last week, I'll just use last week's numbers as examples. Two receivers over 100 yards in the loss to Tech. Brevin Jordan, 7 catches, 136 yards, touchdown. Jeff Thomas, 6 catches, 124, 2 touchdowns. Tailback DJ Dallas had a 62-yard fourth quarter run. And for a team that doesn't run the ball well, he still broke it through. He broke a tackle with the line of scrimmage, ducked kind of under a guy, and then took off. They got speed. They've got a quarterback who, when he gets time, can actually find guys. And so Mendenhall talked about that in his presser this week. He said, you know, they're dynamic. We know their personnel. I've been in this league long enough now to know some of their players are players we've had exposure to. Their skilled players are fast. Any given play, a ball can be handed off to someone or thrown, and they can go the whole way. That's an inherent threat. That's, you know, and he says as a play caller, you know, he's not the defensive play caller anymore. But when he was calling plays defensively, the thing that worried him the most were the teams that had dynamic personnel that on any given play could go the whole way. You know, it's kind of like in baseball. I also talk baseball. We do baseball podcasts. You know, in this day and age with baseball, so many people complain about the home runs and strikeouts. It's either one result or the other. And the reason more teams are going to the all or nothing approach is because you realize that it's really hard to get three or four hits against pitchers anymore. You know, with guys who throw gas coming out, you know, everybody throws 95 miles an hour. Everybody's got a big breaking ball. So why try to pinch together three or four hits in an inning? If you can get one guy on and hit a home run, that's two runs, and you don't have to, you know, get four or five straight hits to do that. Football is a similar approach, you know, and I tracked this one year, and it taught me a lot. I was tracking the UVA offense, I think it was the 2014 year, and I was trying to track. I just wanted to learn more about, like, the ebb and flow of a game, so I tracked the whole season in terms of where the yards came from. And the yards come from your chunk plays, your 10-plus yard runs. Actually, I even tracked it back to 8-plus yard runs. Because to me, an 8-yard run makes it second and short or third and short or whatever the case may be, and then the 10-plus yard passes. And the bulk of your yards, you know, if you have – I haven't looked this up for the Miami game, but I would bet you that if I did go play-by-play of the 553 yards gained against Tech, I would bet 80% of them came on the chunk plays. The 2-yard run, of course, your incomplete passes. And, you know, the starting quarterback for Miami was 29 of 47. The backup was 4 of 7. That's already 20 plays where you don't gain a yard. But so, you know, they ran the ball, say, 20, 25 times. The running back I mentioned, DJ Dallas, had 62-yard run. He had 69 yards total rushing, you know. So you know, when you're watching the game, think about that the next time you watch. And when you watch Friday night, if you watch the Thursday night game this week, you know, for all the times the defense gets all hyped up because they stop a guy at the line of scrimmage, a yard or two gain, or behind the line of scrimmage, sack, whatever else, you know, the offense, if you lose a yard or two, that's great. The offense is willing to maybe surrender that here if they can get 10 yards on the next play because they still get to move the chains, get the first down. If they get 25 yards, they get in the field goal range. Most yards come that way. So this Miami team, yeah, you know, they're not going to grind out 15-play drives an awful lot. They can certainly burn you. So Virginia has to worry about that. Now, the matchups week to week, it is interesting that Miami plays Virginia Tech and then the very next week plays Virginia. Virginia Tech, of course, with Bud Foster, will stack the line. They'll stack the box with 8 guys. They put their corners on an island. Now, there's often not safety help or there's very minimal help from behind. They tell you they're going to take away the run. And they'll go all out to do that and then make your quarterback make quick decisions. When Virginia Tech is not as stout defensively as they've not been for the last couple of years, they do tend to get chunked like they have this year and certainly last week. Virginia, I'm not so sure that, you know, that you're going to see as many chunk plays out of Miami against this Virginia defense this week, but you do have to keep in mind that there is that distinct possibility. So that game is Friday night. And UVA Miami, actually, I haven't looked this up myself, but I understand Miami is actually favored in this game, which is just atrocious, but it is what it is. Who cares? That's for entertainment purposes only anyway, and I don't bet. I haven't bet on a football game. I'm not sure if I've ever actually placed a bet on a football game. That is an interesting thing to point out. So, but anyway, that is for reporting purposes only. I'll tell you that Miami is favored in this game. Secondhand information there for me. But we'll have full coverage. We've got the columns on the website getting you ready for this. I got Broncos transcript. I got Manny Diaz's transcript if you want to read what they had to say unfiltered. But then also throw my perspectives in on the UVA O-line, the UVA D against the Miami Dynamic offensive players. And then we'll get you ready for Friday night and check back here after the game. And we'll have the recap and more. So. Thank you for listening to our podcast here. Really appreciate it. And any questions, anything you want me to address on a future podcast, please email me, AugustaFreePress2@gmail.com. You can tweet me, @AugFreePress, A-U-G, Free Press. You can mail me. You know, people still do that, actually. So anyway, love to hear from you. And thank you for your time today. And everyone, please have a great and safe day.